cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I hope you enjoyed yesterday's packed show on today's News Talk TNT. Welcome, my friends, to another day on Earth. And I hope you have a lovely Earth Day yesterday. If you weren't aware, which you're probably not, today is World Book Day and National English Muffin Day and Spanish Language Day and National Email Day. And don't forget, it's also World Table Tennis Day. It's also National Sovereignty and Children's Day. They combine the two nowadays. National Sovereignty and Children's always went together, of course. And it's German Beer Day. And also, it's National Talk Like Shakespeare Day, if you didn't know, and National Asparagus Day, National Lost Dog Awareness Day, National Take a Chance Day. And unfortunately, I have to announce with a sad, stone-like Welsh heart that is also St. George's Day. Boo to that awful dragon killer. Anyway, so before you celebrate by dipping your asparagus into your German beer and making your dog homeless and shouting ole, let's discuss something more important. Have you heard that Matthew Letizier is a conspiracy theorist? It's true. He's been on the TNT a few times and they're saying it out loud. Did you know that Jeremy Corbyn is also an anti-Semite? It's true. They say it all over the place. And were you aware that I am probably both? Well, at least if you use the establishment's dictionary of smears, available at all bad bookshops, it seems that the oldest trick in the book of tarring and feathering someone who the establishment disagrees with is still in vogue. Some of the tropes and insults used to smear people are so old that they're written in hieroglyphs, and these terms are bandied around when someone has run out of arguments. They're the last resort of those who use logical fallacies as a weapon against their enemies. The Israeli lobbies have been pushing the anti-Semitic accusations so hard over the past few decades that almost everyone on Earth, including a load of Semites, are supposedly anti-Semites. It doesn't matter what you think about the Jewish people. If you don't agree with the IDF murdering women and children, then you are an anti-Semite, of course. This is an extremely dangerous game. Once upon a time, that word actually meant something quite powerful. Actually, it caused people to lose their jobs. It led to politicians losing elections. It led to people's lives being ruined, and sometimes even led to jail terms. Now, it leads to people saying, get lost. There is only a certain amount of times that you can accuse people of being something they're not, and in this situation, those times have definitely passed. If anti-Semite means that you don't want Israeli Unit 8200 Cyber Division involved in your national health services, then many of us are definitely anti-Semites. If anti-Semite means you don't want to call the police in America and instead get put through to a Unit 8200 Cyber Division set up by a former head of Mossad, an Israeli PM, and Epstein associate Ehud Barak, then many of us are definitely anti-Semites. If anti-Semite means you don't think Israel should use AI to target any military-aged male in Gaza, regardless whether he or not he's actually an enemy combatant, then we're probably anti-Semites. And if anti-Semite means you don't want your tax money to go towards murdering tens of thousands of women and children in an apartheid Jewish ethnostate, then my friends, welcome to the anti-Semite club. We're here. You may have seen Gideon Fahler, a man who is paid six-figure salary to call people anti-Semites, trying to cross the counter-protest line so as to incite a little violence. Gideon uses a very simple trick. He supports the murder of non-Jewish children. People get angry, and then he calls them an anti-Semite, of course. We need to become wiser. We need to care less about names that they will call us because we need to focus on the facts. What is worse, telling someone they're bad for supporting the murder of children or the murder of children itself? Don't stop defending children, whatever you do. Has everyone totally forgotten the old expression? Bombs and drones may murder our children, but names will never hurt me. Now, just before we continue, how do you fancy a bank holiday weekend at music festival for the Truth and Freedom Tribe? That's us, by the way. We're the Truth and Freedom Tribe, and I'm seriously thinking about going to this festival here. We're 30 awake artists, including Danny Ramplin and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, which sounds dangerous, especially if little cows around, Bouncy Castle and Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. This is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth in the world. A Stand in the Park and The Light Paper presents Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District on May 24th to the 27th. You get 4 days camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus a booking fee. Children under five come free. There's no better bargain anywhere, apparently. Visit our website now to make sure you don't miss out on going to a brilliant weekend for the whole Freedom family. StandInTheLight.uk. It's only round the corner. Get ready for it, my friends. And remember, at TNT, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7, online, globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Nice to see everybody in the chat. Loving the sunny background that you see. Town Hall, Cardiff Town Hall, just behind me in the museum, of course. It's lovely. Now, there's a war being waged between Australia and the social media platform X after Australia's online safety regulator demanded the removal of videos related to a violent stabbing that took place in a Sydney church. And believe it or not, the outcome of this battle may have far-reaching consequences that could affect the entire internet. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark. Ruckus, tell us more about this, please.
I will do my best, Johnny, because the information is coming fast and furious. I have like literally 20 tabs open in front of me, so wish me luck. So here's what's really going on in case you missed it. Let's just assume you woke up from a coma and you don't use the internet and you have no idea what's going on. Well, just days after a knife man killed six at a mall earlier this month, Australia was rocked by another stabbing incident in the suburbs of Sydney when on April 15th, a bishop and a priest were stabbed during a live streamed sermon. Graphic footage of the attack, which the government deemed terrorism, quickly circulated online and sparked riots near the church scene of the crime. And then, of course, the big news that people have probably heard of surrounding this is the fact that the following day, on April 16th, Australia's e-safety commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, ordered social media companies, including X and Meta, to take down the videos within 24 hours under the powers of the country's Online Safety Act. Meta reportedly acted swiftly. X did not. There is a battle going on right now. So I'm going to get into that in just a second. But related to all of this, it's not just X. There's a lot more going on. This has now set lawmakers out there in Australia, politicians, both in the government and the opposition, who are now pressuring social media all around in general to demonstrate, quote unquote, more vigilance when dealing with content related to these Sydney stabbing attack incident. Now, this, of course, refers not only to mass censorship in the form of removing content designated as, quote unquote, misinformation, but also to pushing for, here it comes, online age verification, with the incidents and the subsequent events utilized to give a fresh impetus to such broad policies. There seems to be a high degree of consensus since the demands are coming from both Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and the leader of the opposition, Peter Dutton. Albanese reacted by criticizing social media for not reacting fast enough to quote unquote protect users and revealed that he is, quote, prepared to take whatever action is necessary to haul these companies into line, end quote. He was also upset that social media users posted, as they often do, the videos that they took of the incidents on their accounts, quote, instead of forwarding it to the police, end quote. That's right. So if you had taken videos, you were supposed to send it to the cops, not put it on your social media. Shame on you. Albanese spoke about the concept of a quote unquote social license as something that social platforms are apparently granted in order to operate. And in line with this idea, must, quote, start to understand their social responsibility, end quote. The prime minister previously described the platforms as a, quote, scourge in many ways, end quote, while the opposition, led by Dutton, brought up online age verification, i.e. digital ID, as one of the ways Australia can make its already highly controversial restrictive internet schemes even, quote, unquote, better. So we've got that going on, and as far as Musk and all of that is concerned, well, he's gotten into a bit of a war of the words between himself and none other than the prime minister. Elon Musk is probing, asking whether or not Australia, the entire government, is attempting to censor content on the internet all over the place, the entire globe. And he's not the only one concerned by this. There was an article I found courtesy of Epoch Times highlighting a former federal agent who has expressed concerns about all of this. Carrick Ryan, a former federal agent working in counterterrorism, said in a post on X, April 23rd, quote, if the Australian government gets to decide what content is allowed on the internet, why not the Chinese government, the Saudi government, the Russian government, end quote. Oh, and in another post, he asks, quote, should Israel be allowed to censor scenes of dead babies from Twitter, question mark, end quote. These are all valid points. So I think we need to pay very close attention to what happens here in the battle between Musk and Albanese, or Inman, as it were. But yeah, what do you think, Johnny?
There is loads going on here, isn't there? Lots and lots. I mean, it's really hard to work out who's the good guys in this new world that we're entering into, especially this tech world. I know that Elon Musk may poise himself as the hero, as the person who's going to save your free speech, and then he'll be happy to put in any restrictions once any law gets passed and not argue about it too much, of course. He can threaten just like he did in Brazil, but as a lot of these things get rolled back. Now, a lot of people don't even understand what this would mean. I mean, Jordan B. Peterson was actually pushing for something like what the Australians are doing here. He was trying to make it so that everybody is, he was at least back in the campaign for everybody to have to use their real identity. You couldn't have pseudonym accounts anymore. You have to dox yourself. You have to show who you are to have any sort of speech online. People don't realize it was a precursor to the internet. You know, a lot of people don't understand about Usenet, which was the first internet, you could say. It was mainly used between college campuses in America and institutions in America. And the internet itself was announced by Tim Berners-Lee on Usenet when he created it. So it was really important thing. But everybody was posting under their own email address. So it meant that, number one, you could be held to account for what you said. And as soon as Usenet bought out by Google, the fact that loads of people had said a load of things under their own name panicked everybody, and the whole thing got basically scrubbed. Google promised they would protect it, and then they just completely and utterly pulled off loads of parts of it and made it completely unsearchable. And of course, it leads you to another form of censorship in a sense. And here we go. This is really weird, isn't it? Because in a sense, we censor ourselves when we go online with a bit of anonymity. And of course, having to verify your age means you have to verify your identity, because how are you going to verify your age? You got to do it by a passport. You got to do it by an ID card. You know, this is not a slippery slope. This is a cliff. This is a drop off the edge of a cliff. If we walk off this cliff, there is zero return to the internet of the past. We will be watched, cajoled. They will be able, and as you said, quite rightly, and what is the next stage? It's, well, the Israelis being able to hide the massacres they're committing at the moment. It's people being able to say, I don't like that video you've got there. I'm going to have it pulled down. And that already happens by companies. We have a little bit of recourse, but we can at least take them to maybe to court or something if we felt so strongly about it, about the censorship we're receiving. In their future that they want to create, we've got no rights whatsoever. And the internet is something that is completely controlled by them. What do you think will happen with this ruckus? Do you think that these changes will be adopted that will cause a domino effect around the world and the internet will change? Or do you think that they will eventually have to pull down the internet and create another version of the internet?
I'm going to go with the former rather than the latter, unfortunately, Johnny. I really do feel that this is a lot of this Hegelian dialectic. So the battle right now is over the violent content, the Australia demanding X to take down the videos globally and X saying, oh, how dare you. So we'll watch that battle play out. But the ultimate result, I'm convinced, is going to be this issuing of the digital ID to further control and lock down the internet. So I think we'll survive the censorship hump on this one, get everybody rolled into this ID thing, and then we're going to face bigger problems there as we move into the elections and World War III and the next pandemic, my friend.
I know there's some people in the, including DC in the question, saying how difficult is it to set up a social media platform? So, you know, there will always be people who will look to change and to create a new platform for the future. Well, thanks for bringing us that, Ruckus. I'll see you in the next hour, my friend. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. A hoax about carbon dioxide in the climate has caused a global energy and economic disaster. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. My next guest is Benjamin Rubinstein, whose journey started in a small farm town hit by an opioid crisis. His escape was the world of video games. Oh my God, a dangerous place, where he built successful businesses from his parents' basement. As his ventures grew, he moved to Washington, D.C., earning recognition as a local esports leader. If you know what that means, some of the ladies in the chat might be a bit too young. Ooh, I better not say the old word. Rubinstein's path took an unexpected turn when he was involved in political standoff in the Venezuelan embassy in D.C., resulting in his arrest by Secret Service. Oh, they're not so secret when they come after you, are they? Despite the odds, he won his case in court. During the COVID-19 pandemic, he moved to Nicaragua and was invited to observe the presidential elections. Today, Mr. Rubinstein, Ben Rubinstein, continues to embrace his roles as an entrepreneur, activist, and journalist. You can follow him on X, Twitter, at Ben F. Rubinstein. Rubinstein is R-U-B-I-N, STEIN, Mr. Rubenstein, sir. Welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Johnny.
Oh, I'm happy to see such a man with who looks so smart and beautiful. You look brilliant today. So, can you tell me why the Israel lobby groups are so rattled by students protesting the atrocities happening in Gaza?
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of the same reason they want to ban TikTok, right? They're afraid that they're losing the generation of youth, and that's going to play out 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now. And Israel will have zero legitimacy by that time because, as I said, they've lost the youth. They're afraid that it's going to paralyze the entire higher education of the United States, because it's not an isolated incident just at Columbia University. The number of college campuses which are seeing these pro-Palestine encampments are growing wildly, and the protests are escalating. It's really bringing out sort of the contradictions between the people in charge and everybody else. So I think that they're afraid because it's an existential threat if they lose the support base of the youth, which Israel has relied on for basically its entire existence.
Indeed. And the intelligence agencies and everybody who's trying to create our society has, of course, targeted the youth. I mean, I've done a lot of work on this with my Schwab articles about how Kissinger and others created, groups like International Seminar, which was targeted at youth in leadership programs, and how this led to the, of course, World Economic Forum, Young Global Leaders. They always see the youth as the most important. It was something that before, back in the days of communism, the communists were on top of, but after World War II, suddenly the West became involved with heavily. Is there a concerted effort to infiltrate the protest movements being organized across the camp, all across campuses within the Western world, do you think?
Yeah, there's always been infiltration that's happened among protest movements going back as far back, far before either you or I were alive. But, it actually took quite an interesting turn yesterday, where this Mossad-linked doxing collective on Twitter tweeted out publicly. Now, this stuff is normally done behind the scenes, very low key, under the table. But they tweeted out publicly that they're looking for infiltrators, and they might even hire them if they have brown skin and have an Arabic sounding name. So I think that, yeah, there's definitely a risk. If you go through some of the videos of confrontations happening around pro-Palestine protests, there always seems to be a Zionist who inserts themselves in the worst location possible and tries to provoke responses from pro-Palestine protesters, and oftentimes they are successful. This is not a new strategy. We've seen this. We dealt with it at the Venezuelan embassy, which you mentioned. We dealt with it during the George Floyd uprising. They dealt with it in the January 6th uprising, if you want to call it that. I'm not sure it actually was, but I'll let the audience decide that for themselves. But the reality is that the federal government, and even apparently foreign intelligence agencies like the Mossad, are in fact infiltrating movements across the country. And it's scary because these people have a lot more information than we do to work with. They're a lot more organized, and they're very well funded, and they have nefarious intentions.
You can definitely see this happening all around. And the guy I was mentioning, Gideon Falt, I think his name is, who was the guy who's being reported all over the news today in Britain, because the police said, "You're obviously Jewish," which apparently is not something you're supposed to say to someone who is clearly obvious Jewish, wearing a skull cap and trying to walk into the counter protest movement so that he can cause and incite some form of amazing. It's completely amazing that you're not allowed to talk about this. You're not allowed to talk about this if you're on the other side. It's a completely different world we're living in. It looks like a comic book world at times. Can I ask, do you think Palestine will ever be allowed freedom within our lifetime, or do you think Palestine is almost gone?
I think Palestine definitely will be free in our lifetime, and I think is likely going to happen a lot sooner than people think. You know, it wasn't so long ago where we thought there was going to be a full-blown war between Iran and Israel. That could still happen. It seems like the crisis was averted at the last second. But if that were to happen, Israel doesn't stand a chance. They are an unbloodied army. They would be fighting enemies on multiple different fronts. And short of U.S. boots on the ground, which would be playing a defensive role, there would be no shot that Israel could sustain it. If they're spending $1.4 billion on air defense in a single night, how long would it take to deplete their entire air defense? Much faster than they could replenish it, that's for sure, especially with the slow walking that happens with arms bills in Congress lately. So I think that Israel could lose their air defense in less than 2 weeks in an all-out war. That's not to mention Hezbollah, who has been escalating on the front lines after many in the north, after many of their senior officials have been assassinated, and they are not even operating at the full capacity that they have in terms of different sorts of weapons, nor in terms of manpower. If Hezbollah wanted, they could have 20,000 people in Israel proper, Tel Aviv, perhaps, tomorrow. They are not doing that. And so, you know, in a scenario where there was an all-out war, you'd be seeing Iraqi Jordanian resistance, you'd be seeing an intifada in the West Bank, you'd be seeing the Hamas and PIJ, other groups, you'd be seeing Houthis. And so, no, I think that Israel is nearing the end of its lifespan, and that is becoming increasingly evident, not only because of armed resistance and tensions in the region, but also because they're losing the diplomatic and political battles on an international level. And they've done damage to themselves through these horrific videos and photos that we've seen just daily of women and children being slaughtered en masse. This has taken away Israel's credibility. Nobody actually buys the self-defense talking point that they put out. It's only really their internet commentators who propagate it amongst people who are already going to be on board with what they're doing. So Israel is being increasingly ostracized, even among the United States Democratic Party, and some in the Republican Party as well. Was not so long ago, I believe it was last week, where people at a Donald Trump rally were chanting Genocide Joe. And Trump stopped and said, they're not wrong. Well, that's significant. That's very significant. And while it may not be anything more than that for the time being, Trump does have to respond to his base. He is a populist leader. And if his base, and they are, decides to increasingly turn on the Zionist state, the Zionist entity, then they've lost support now among both major political parties. And that's not to mention the increasing support Palestine has for a state. It almost got UN recognition just last week. And the only reason it didn't, despite overwhelming support, was because of a veto from the United States.
Yeah, most definitely. Listen, we're going to take a short news break. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Question.
Huh? What are you guys doing today?
The news.
TNT Radio News.
Sounds good.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Senate is poised to vote on a significant national security package that includes $61 billion for Ukraine, $8.1 billion for the Indo-Pacific, and $26.4 billion for Israel and Gaza. North Korea conducted a simulated nuclear counterattack exercise observed by its leader Kim Jong-un, involving multiple rocket launchers that targeted an island in the Sea of Japan.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello, welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm here with Benjamin Rubinstein, who's answering questions in a way that I quite like to hear because he seems like he knows what he's talking about. So do you think the Americans will ever withdraw their support for Israel?
That's a difficult question. I think it's possible, not at the moment. It's possible, actually, that these college campus protests could continue to further erode support. What really needs to happen is people need to start voting on this issue. They can't be, this has to be a red line issue for progressive voters. If you flip multiple states, multiple representative seats, local jurisdictions, even city councils, that's how we can create real change in terms of the elected officials abandoning Israel. So I do think it's possible. I don't think we're there yet. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but that work is being actively done. And there is some success happening. One example is Jose Vega in, I believe, the Bronx is challenging Richie Torres. Now, Richie Torres has received hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Zionist lobby, whereas Jose Vega is just a normal working class guy from the Bronx challenging him, and his campaign is picking up steam. So I do think it's absolutely possible. I can't say when, but I have to say, I think Palestine is more likely to be freed through resistance in that part of the world as opposed to, quote, a lack of support among our democracy.
I completely agree with you there. I think it's only the regional powers that standing up that will see any sort of change. And I'll be discussing that in the next hour with a guest I have on as well. So as a Jewish man, do you think that the weaponization of the term anti-Semitism has significantly decreased the power of what that word really should mean?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think that the overuse of it, not only the overuse of the term anti-Semitism, but the weaponization of the history of the Holocaust has decreased, has devalued the significance of that event. And in this way, I believe it is anti-Semitic to use sort of someone's Jewish identity in order to justify what's happening in Gaza. Gaza is a concentration camp, formerly a concentration camp. Now it's turned into a death camp. And there, the parallels between the Holocaust and what's happening in Palestine right now are numerous. You know, for example, the resistance leaders, they're nationalists. They dedicate their lives to fighting for their people, for fighting for a cause they see as just. And really what we're seeing is increased anti-Semitism in a way that is sort of confusing to a lot of people, because it tends to come from Zionists themselves who are spouting anti-Semitic rhetoric. I get called things like a capo, and if people don't know what capo means, it's basically the worst thing you can call a Jewish person. Capos were individuals in Nazi death camps who were selected by the Nazis to oversee the other prisoners. Obviously, this was a position which was coerced. If you didn't go along with it, you would be the next one in the gas chamber, as it were. But this is a term that these Zionists fling at anti-Zionist Jews in order to essentially call them traitors. Now, in my mind, I think they're the ones who are the capos. They're the ones who are disgracing the memory of our ancestors by using their memory to justify the mass slaughter of women and children. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, that sounds as well like some of the role of what George Soros had during the war when he was young as well. So what has been the overall effects of Zionism, do you think? I know this is a big question for the last minute, but what has been the effects of Zionism over the past 100 years and more?
Well, Zionism is a relatively new ideology. It wasn't the predominant tendency within Judaism, basically, until Hitler killed most of the anti-Zionist or non-Zionist collective Jews. It was only then that the Zionist movement was able to gain enough support to see its goals through and accomplish its goals. So I think that Zionism has very much taken over and convoluted the religion, the culture of Judaism. And I think that it is a ethno-nationalist and ethno-supremacist ideology. And that in itself has some inherent traits which play out in very real ways, such as arrogance. The arrogance that Israel thinks it can bomb an embassy in Damascus and not be hit back and have zero retaliation. So that arrogance in itself is very much indicative of how Israel plays out its behavior on the world stage. And it is also extremely dangerous because we see that they were not at all, they've stated that they were not expecting sort of that response. And it could also be to blame for what happened on October 7th, their arrogance, them thinking they were normalizing with all these countries, that the Palestinian resistance would just give up despite having their blood spilled for generations, despite that being the core aspect of Palestinian identity at this point is resistance. They thought that they would just give up because, oh, we're so powerful and mighty and we have the backing of the United States. And so that arrogance led to events like October 7th being able to actually occur, just not being stopped in its tracks. So I think this arrogance is sort of a fatal flaw of the Zionist supremacy that we see.
Yeah, you listen, Benjamin, my friend, you've got a really important voice at a really important time. Use it. Thank you for coming on the Johnny Vedmore show to discuss all that today, and I hope to have you back sometime soon.
Thank you, Johnny. Anytime.
All right. Have a good one. You're listening to today's News Talk, TNT.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
Qué color. Perfecto, amigo.
Gracias. Thank you.
What's wrong, mijo?
Donating to a pet's medical care is one of the many ways you can help families in your community. Pets and people belong together. Learn more at petsandpeopletogether.org.
You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello and welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. It's true, that's me, and that's where we are. I'm going to be speaking with someone now who I'm meeting for the first time. Bruce can be found as a regular on X Spaces. He's former military, he was a teenage father, and he's had a fair few experiences which have made him see the world through a slightly different lens. So you can find him on X at MC_Bruce. I say it like that because it's Bruce. Bruce, welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show, my friend. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I see the wonderful t-shirt there, conspiracy theory. I'm not sure what comes underneath it,
expert.
Yeah, about right. So I'm going to ask you a question, first of all. You might have to explain to people yourself on it, and it's a pretty extreme question for my first question, but okay. What is it like to die?
For me personally, it was just, I guess, I didn't feel anything. I didn't experience anything out of the ordinary. Just no feelings, no tunnel, no weirdness that people usually report. The only thing that happened to me was everything went black, and that was it.
That was it. So can you tell people how that happened, or how you got to that stage?
Yes. So when I was a little kid in daycare, the caregivers took us to they walked us to the local pool. And while we were at the pool, I was sitting in the little shallow end with all the kids, with my legs in the water. I didn't want to get into the water. I just wanted to sit there with my legs in there. And the little kids, all the other kids were splashing me. So I got up and I moved to the deep end and put my feet in the water and just enjoying having my feet in the water. Well, the male caregiver, I see him walking around the pool. He walks towards me and he asks me why I'm sitting by myself. And I told him what I was doing and why. And he asked me if I wanted to swim. And I was like, no, I don't know how to swim. I just want to sit here with my legs in the pool. And the next thing you know, I was flying through the air. and then I landed in the water, and then I was struggling to swim. Then I went under the water, and that's when everything went dark. Then next thing you know, I wake up, I'm laying down on the concrete, looking up, and everybody surrounded me, and the lady caregiver, she's like, hey, don't tell your mom. I was like, okay, I won't tell my mom. And then, so ever since then, I saw things that I wasn't supposed to see, ghosts and spooks and specters and whatnot, and the other things that are out there.
Wow. Okay. Right. So nothing happened straight away, but then things started to happen. Because my mum, she has, you could say, psychic tendencies. She's experienced a lot of things that are very unusual. I've actually had weird joint experiences with her. I'm yet to make up my mind on what any of it means, and I'm willing to accept that the mind is strange, the world is strange. I can't quite explain it, so I often don't try and explain it. But she actually died while giving birth to my sister, and she had a different experience. She had the experience of rising above and looking down and seeing herself on the operating table. So she had a full out-of-body experience, and then after that she had many experiences that can only really be understood by using the term psychic realm, spirituality. So what was, when did you first start having experiences that were beyond what someone living would experience, do you think?
It would have been the same day. Right when I got home, I started noticing shadow people. So there's three different types of shadow people. You get the black ones, the white ones, and the gray ones. And I started seeing the little black ones. And then I started seeing ghosts of all different transparencies, pretty much, like barely see-through, really transparent. And there was the ones that scared me as a little kid were the ones that looked just like regular people. Before my drowning, I was a very talkative little kid, right? Afterwards, not so much. I was really timid because my mom would take us to places and introduce me to a lot of people and a lot of family and whatnot. And she would say, hey, this is so-and-so. And then I would say, well, hi, nice to meet you and stuff. And then she would look at me and she's like, who are you talking to? You know, so and then I would look at her and I would be facing the completely wrong person, and then that I can only see, but they couldn't. And then so I noticed that I became timid. I didn't want to talk to anybody after that until I was able to touch them. If my hand went through them, they weren't real. But if I was able to touch them, then I could talk to them.
Do you still have those experiences now? Is it still something that you're able to see, or you're able to experience?
Yeah, somewhat, but not as much as before. Before, I think, because I was scared and didn't know, I was putting out all that fear energy, so that was attracting a lot of things towards me. Now, no, not so much. The last time I experienced it was a few days ago when I was traveling through Mississippi. I saw a lot of black shadows crossing the highway, you know, at a really high rate of speed, and I was on a bus, and one even like walked down the aisle, of the bus. But other than that, no. I don't see him too much anymore.
I'm just looking in the chat here and seeing people responding to this. And a lot of people are saying things like, Weefat Shug says, we all have psychic abilities. We just don't know it. These are, when you have lived with a mother who is... got some form of power beyond our realm or experiences something that is described, that she describes as that. It's hard for me to even find the words to describe it because I sit so much on the fence, because a lot of the time I think, well, if this is real and this is true and I have had weird experiences in my life, then how is that going to affect me or change my life if I can't do anything, show anybody else it, or explain to anybody else it? A lot of the time it helps people I think to like kind of have a grasp of their own sort of experiences that are beyond the norm or beyond what we used to experience. In now I experience out of body experiences, sleep paralysis. I get paralyzed during sleep sometimes. I have out of body experiences that come with that. I have lucid dreaming, things like that. Did you have any of those sort of experiences alongside that, or is it just seeing shadow people when you're awake?
Yeah, it was a lot of supernatural stuff. So, you know, I had the premonition dreams. I did the lucid dreaming. I was taught how to dream walk, which is getting invited into someone else's dream. I was learning how to astral plane, but haven't really completed that training. I noticed that I became more empathetic, where I could feel other people's feelings. Sometimes like I would get angry, but it wasn't my anger. It was someone next to me that was angry. And just because they were angry, I got angry. Same thing with all the other different emotions. Then I started learning that I could heal people. I could take away their pain and whatnot. Then talking it over with my mother, she was explaining that my grandmother, you know, was a healer too. So it wasn't just I guess it's a generational thing, you know, coming from my family, but more so because of my accident. That's what I think. That's what kickstarted it for me, instead of me learning it and then, you know, I guess continuing the family the family business or whatnot. No. I think the accident just kickstarted it for me, and I started seeing and experiencing the world differently.
So do you think if you were born a couple of hundred years ago that you would have been handed down this experience in a different way, maybe by family members?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think, you know, it's like we're taught right now. It's like, okay, we're leaning more towards returning to nature, right? Grounding yourself. If you're feeling off, walking near running water, right? Some sort of live water, beach, the river, something. Those usually makes us feel good. And then it's not only that. I've noticed that there's a lot of us out there, and we're all attracted to each other. Good or bad, whatever they tend to be, it's all about intent with people, but we are attracted to each other. So I don't believe in coincidences. Right? These synchronicities bring us closer together. We're meant to meet the people we're supposed to meet. We're meant to be at a certain place. Even if it's not for us, it might be for them. I believe this is all happening for a reason. You know, I wasn't meant to die.
I was gonna ask how have other people throughout your life, because you were in the military, for instance, how did you tell people within your unit about these experiences, or do you kind of like not necessarily tell certain people, or do you know who to tell?
I didn't tell everybody, but I pretty much did tell everybody, you know, secondhand. They would hear something. We'd be out in the field doing exercises, and, you know, I would be looking somewhere, and someone like, what are you looking at? And I was like, I'm looking at that guy, right? And they're like, what guy? So then I'm like, okay, I got to tell you something. And I would have to tell my buddies. what the deal is, or and the thing about it is this the states and I was stationed in Germany too. So Germany, oh my goodness, that's a different animal because there's more happening over there than in the states. It's over there, it's more concentrated everywhere. You see all different things over there. But I think I told some of my friends. I kept quiet to others, and if it got too hot to where like they're like, oh, well, you know, you got to go start talking to the psychiatrist or some, the psychologist, I would stop talking about it.
Yeah, I'm looking across at the TNT chat, and everybody is having goosebumps by this because they've all got their experiences of their own experience of the supernatural, what is we deem as supernatural, but just maybe a different form of natural. Yeah, that's a really weird thing to think about as well, that in Europe, of course, it's had much more history, I suppose. So you would expect something like that. So did that help you in waking up? Did that help you wake up to things not being normal and help you become the conspiracy theory expert that you are today?
Well, from a young age, I was aware of a lot of things that people weren't aware of, obviously. As far as aware of like things not happening the way they're supposed to happen and the world not functioning the way it's supposed to function, I think I was always questioning things. So it's like I grew up as the conspiracy theorist. You know, I was the kid asking all the questions like, why is this happening? Why is that happening? Why is it happening to me? Right. That's the big question everybody ask themselves when they find themselves having certain abilities and whatnot. It's like, why me? Sadly, I don't know. I don't know why it happens to certain people and not others. It's really confusing.
I do think it's easier for someone like myself who's had a mother who is very, you know, my mum went to, and she'd hate it when I called it this, but we because she hated it, we'd call it spooky church, because they'd go, and of course they'd all the psychics get together in one place and they have spiritual worship of their own. They had actually two kind of hymns that they used to sing. One of them was Robbie Williams' Angels, and the other was I Just Called to Say I Love You, of course. But I mean, that experience actually helped members of my family get over the death of my young cousin when she was 18. She passed, and of course, experiences help that. Now you're nowadays you're also on X Spaces quite a lot, and you're moving around. Are people asking, is that what you mainly speak about in X Spaces, or do you have a range of topics that you like to talk about nowadays?
Yeah, I'm mostly on X. Before that, I was on Discord, and I tried Google Hangouts, and I jumped from group to group. Right now I'm finding myself on X. And I mostly talk about the supernatural and the extraordinary stuff. I obtained a lot of generational information that I try to pass on to others, right? Because we're all having certain questions, and I try to give as much information as possible because it's not in my information, right? It's like, I found that, I get a lot of satisfaction from helping others. So I try not to make it for about myself. This is going against what I believe just being here. But I want to reach more people. And like I said, we're meant to meet each other. So I usually just sit in a space and wait for people to show up, and they do. And then I talk and I speak and I pass on the information that they need to get unstuck from whatever dilemma they're, you know, struggling with. And then I just move on to the next space.
So what's the best way for people to find you now in the real world?
there's one space that I'm usually at, and it's called Fred's Conspiracy Space on X, right? He's there 24/7. Right. So I, whenever I feel like I need to talk to somebody, I'll just hop on and start talking.
Awesome. Awesome. Listen, thanks, Bruce, for joining us today and for telling us something that has really sparked a load of interesting debate amongst the chat. I hope to speak to you again sometime soon. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Johnny.
Awesome. Well, now that was a bit of a twist at the end of the first hour. Really enjoyed speaking with Bruce. Really enjoyed speaking with the man, Benjamin Rubinstein, as well. We're going to be talking to someone who I love very much in the second half of the show. So stay tuned to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT.